Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to poker tournament strategy. Now here's your host, Clayton Fletcher.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, sponsored by ACR, America's Card Room, where, beginning next week, we have the $5 million Venom PKO, a tournament that I can't wait to play in. It's a $26.50 buy-in with satellites beginning at $1 running round the clock on ACR. I'm Clayton Fletcher, and I'm in beautiful, sunny Phoenix, Arizona, where I have been performing all over the sunny, beautiful state of Arizona. I love cacti. Today, we're going to jump right into strategy. And well, first, let me just say, we are still working on getting the much coveted guest, Ebony Kenny, to appear on the program. We are trying. That is still in the works. But today, it's just you and me. And I have not one, not two, but three hands from last year's World Series of Poker main event, day three. This is the nitty-gritty time. The bubble is approaching. We're about 140 players away from the bubble. Something like 1,450 players remaining in the tournament. The tension is palpable. And I'm wondering if you guys will agree with me that the bubble has an effect on the players in these hands we're about to discuss. So let's get right into it today, guys. I don't want to talk about any gossip or any rumors or any stuff like that that's going on. I know we're all getting excited for the World Series of Poker, which, by the way, begins in less than 50 days. So book your travel. All right, here we go. It's 3,000, 5,000. We're going to be at the same table as we were on last week's episode, but the blinds have increased. It's now 3,000, 5,000, and 5,000. And the seat where we last saw Ryan Feldman regretting his decision to call off with top pair is now occupied by the great Cliff Josephy. That's right, Johnny Backs himself joins our table in the seat formerly occupied by Ryan Feldman, who has since busted out of this tournament. Johnny Backs, Cliff Josephy, a great player, a really fun guy. Not fun in the sense that having him at your table is necessarily a picnic, but he's got a great sense of humor. I think I've talked on this podcast before about a particularly memorable experience that I had playing with Mr. Josephy at the Venetian. I believe it was in one of their $1,600 summer specials, maybe like a 1 million guarantee or something like that at that price point. And I was stuck right in between Mr. Cliff Josephy on my right and the great Joseph Chung on my left. So that was a tough experience, but I still enjoyed it because I like both of those guys personally. I'd just rather not play poker with them if I can help it. Anyway, Cliff Josephy, Johnny Backs, legendary poker player, final table of this exact tournament back in 2016, made the main event final table. Also very well known for being part of a prolific staking and backing operation for many, many years. Backs and Sheets, you guys know who they are. Anyway, so we are going to have a look at Cliff Josephy and his 996,000 stack. Wowee. I mean, at this point in the tournament, the average is less than 500,000. So he is doing just great, about 140 places away from the bubble late on day three. And the action folds to Austin Apicella, which those of you who are really paying attention will realize that I was mispronouncing his name in last week's episode, repeatedly and confidently mispronounced Austin Apicella, which I'm now saying correctly. He's in third position with a huge stack, 1.1 million, and he opens to 12,000 at 3,000, 5,000, 5,000. The action folds to the aforementioned Cliff Johnny Backs Josephy in the cutoff, holding the 10 of spades 10 of hearts, and 996,000 in his stack. So what to do with pocket 10s facing a standard raise from early middle position? I think we can absolutely 3-bet. I mean, we've got plenty of chips, as does our opponent. I know that the bubble kind of looms here, but it shouldn't really be a factor pre-flop. These guys both have 200 big blinds in their stacks. It's unlikely that that amount of chips would ever go in this close to the money in the main event. Of course, calling is okay as well with pocket 10s. I think I would prefer a 3-bet in general, but Austin Apicella has kind of a tight reputation. He's pretty well known in the poker world, as I soon discovered on twitter.com/ClaytonComic, where many of you, and I mean almost a dozen, corrected my pronunciation of his last name. So I guess people know him, and one thing they know about him is how he says his last name, and another thing he's known for is mostly tight conservative play. So here we are in Josephy's shoes, holding the 10 of spades, 10 of hearts, facing a raise from third position from Austin Apicella. Josephy elects to just call. Totally fine. Why play a big pot against a tight player? I get it. I still prefer 3-betting just because 10s is such a strong hand, but obviously Cliff Josephy makes a defensible decision here. I think the solvers would probably have us mixing it up a little bit with the 10s, although I'm not sure, and we are 200 big blinds deep, so what difference does it really make? Anyhow, let's call. Everyone else folds. We're going to see a flop. And now, with 37,000 in the pot, the flop comes. King of spades, 8 of spades, 5 of clubs. So king, 8-5 with 2 spades. Hero holding the 10 of spades, 10 of hearts. And now, Apicella fires a continuation bet of 14K into the 37,000 pot with a hand that I have yet to reveal. So how do you want to play with pocket 10s in this situation? I think this is a pretty clear call. I don't want to fold, obviously, because there's just too good of a chance that my 10s are good on King 8-5. We also have the backdoor spade draw. It would only be a 10 high flush if we get there, but, you know, maybe it comes with the Jack of Spades and the Queen of Spades, and then we only have one card to worry about. But more importantly, I think that we don't really gain too much value from raising. Typically, if the 10s are good, any hand we're beating will just fold to the raise, and then we can't get any more value for our hand. And if we're beat, it's very hard to imagine many hands folding. Possibly we could fold out pocket jacks, pocket queens on this king high flop, but that's a pretty minor consideration. I think that a lot of Apicella's range for betting this flop will be king X type of hands, and therefore raising just doesn't make that much sense. I would call, and that's what Cliff Josephy does as well. And we're off to the turn with 65,000 in the middle. The turn comes the 4 of spades. So our board is now king of spades, 8 of spades, 5 of clubs, 4 of spades. Hero holding the 10 of spades, 10 of hearts. And this time, Apicella checks. All right, so let's talk about the range that bets the flop and checks this particular turn card. Well, Austin Apicella is a good player. He's going to have some strong hands in his checking range. He's not the type of player that we can just bet with impunity every time this guy checks on 4th Street. He's going to have some very strong hands in his range. He's going to have some bluff catchers, like a King X type of hand, King Queen, for example. Might not be too happy about seeing a third spade appear, but is also not planning to fold to any normal size bet on the turn. So with that in mind, I think that the best play here holding the pocket 10s is just to check behind. And that's exactly what Cliff Josephy does. So we're keeping the pot relatively small here. And the river comes the 9 of clubs with 65K still in the middle for a final board of King of Spades, 8 of Spades, 5 of clubs, 4 of Spades, 9 of clubs. King 8, 5, 4, 9 with 3 spades. And now Austin Apicella fires 21,000 into the 65,000 pot. And Cliff Josephy holding pocket tens and getting about 4-1 on a call throws the tens away. This is a strange play to me. I mean, maybe he thought he saw something in Austin Apicella. Maybe he thought it was just too likely that he was either up against a pair of kings or better, all the way up to a flush. I don't really know why Cliff Josephy makes this fold. I'm pretty sure that I would absolutely have called in this situation, particularly getting 4-1. Let's think about what 4-1 means, guys. So when he fires in 21K, now there is 86,000 in the pot, and it's only 21,000 to call. So in order to be profitable, our hand has to be good one time out of five, or more than one time out of five. That's what 4-1 means. Another way of looking at it is there a greater than 20% chance that my hand is good? And if the answer is yes, we should be calling. Now, you could say, well, maybe he's just being conservative around the bubble. And if you feel that way, that's fine. But let's keep in mind, these guys start this hand with 200 times the big blind. Like, even if he calls and loses another 21,000, Josephy is not really in any grave danger of not cashing in the main event. He will still have so many chips in front of him. And I'd love to ask him about this decision, why he folded. By the way, as it turns out, Austin Apicella had the ace of diamonds, nine of hearts. So just a pair of nines there, and the tens were good. I like to think that did not influence my decision to want to call, because of course it's always easier when you can actually see the cards that the players hold. But I like to think I've been doing this long enough that that doesn't really influence me. I just think it's a call. I mean, yeah, of course he could have a king. Of course he could have a flush. He could have two pair. He could have a set. But getting 4-1, you got to show me the hand. You're not taking this pot away from me for 21,000. Let me know what you guys think about this relatively snug laydown by Cliff Josephy. You can find me on Twitter at Clayton Comic. You can also go into the Discord. We have our own Tournament Poker Edge Discord. We've got a link to that in the description of this podcast. And all you have to do is click on the link and join the Discord. We have a whole discussion going on, an entire channel dedicated just to the podcast. So I'd love for you to go in there and share your thoughts either on the Discord or on Twitter. By the way, guys, if you join the TPE Discord, you can find out the information on how to register for this week's Tournament Poker Edge free roll on America's Card Room. This coming Sunday, April 16th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, we are giving away $1,000 in the form of a free roll event on ACR. By the way, if you're not yet a member of America's Card Room, you can sign up using the link in the description to this podcast and get yourself a 100% first-time deposit bonus up to $2,000 by using the promo code TPE. All right, so he makes the fold, and in the very next hand, this time the action actually folds to Cliff Josephy, and now he's in the hijack, so it's the very next hand, and he's got the King of Diamonds, Queen of Clubs. So King, Queen offsuit, folded to you in the hijack. What do you do? I think folding this hand would be absolutely ridiculous. We're going to raise. We're going to come in for a raise. And the standard raise at the table seems to be 12K. And that's what Cliff makes it. So he raises to 12,000. He's got, like, still got 950,000 behind. And he's got King Queen. Next to act from Austria, we have Matthias Auer, a professional player from Austria, a young man in his late 20s, and he three bets to 30,000 off of a stack of 286,000. So we made it 12 from the hijack, and next to act in the cutoff, the young man from Austria, three bets to 30K. He's got another 256,000 in his stack, and the action folds all the way back around to Cliff Josephy. So what would you do holding the king queen in this situation. I really don't like calling with this hand, especially with these stacks. I mean, Matias starts with about 60 big blinds. I think I would prefer either folding or re-raising. I would probably make it about 80,000, and let's really put the pressure on this guy. He may be feeling the bubble pressure a little bit. Also, this is a very different situation. This man's stack is only a third of the size of Cliff Josephy's stack, actually less than a third. And so he really can't hurt us as much as we can hurt him. And I think putting on the pressure, you will many times find that these European youngsters like to try to three bet fairly light facing a late position raise. Remember, we opened initially from the hijack, and so his three bet is coming from the cutoff, and I would say there's a pretty good chance he does not have a monster. Also, let's bear in mind, guys, with the king queen offsuit, we actually block quite a few monsters ourselves, right? He's less likely to have kings, queens, ace king, and ace queen, and those are some of the most important hands for him to have in his value three betting range. Now, okay, we don't block pocket aces, but I have a feeling if we put in a four bet here, we will find out rather quickly that Matias Auer has pocket aces, if that's the case. So I'm willing to fade that possibility, and I'd like to make it 80 or 85,000, something in that range. Let's see how serious this kid is about possibly going broke, just 125 players away from the money bubble in the most important tournament of the year. You guys know I like to abuse the bubble, and this feels like a spot to me. Well, Cliff agrees, but he kind of takes a different tack and just shoves the whole 286,000 total effective. I mean, he says all in, basically putting Matias Auer to the ultimate test. Do you have a hand that you want to play for all the chips, or can I just have that 30 you just put in plus the blinds and antes? And the answer is, take it down, Cliff, as Matias Auer of Australia folds the king of spades, seven of spades. Pretty wild play, in my opinion, by Cliff Josephy. He really can't get called unless Auer has a very big hand, but perhaps Cliff sensed something. Maybe he picked up a tell or something like that and just felt like shoving was the way to go. I mean, it's a pretty wild play. I mean, he shoved 286,000 effective to win the 56K that was already in the middle at that point. It's almost 60 big blinds. So yeah, that is not something you will find on many pre-flop charts, but it worked out very well for Cliff and kind of made up for the tight fold with the pocket tens. All right, let's do one more. This is also from the 2022 World Series of Poker main event, but a different table. At this table, the action folds to Karim Ribe of Algeria, one of the chip leaders in the tournament with 1.3 million in the stack. He makes it 13,000 in second position, and I don't want to reveal his hand. The action folds all the way around to the great David Peters in the small blind. Easily one of the top 10 or 15 no-limit hold'em tournament players in the known universe, and he's got pocket jacks in the small blind, the jack of spades and jack of clubs. And Peters sitting on a really big stack of his own, 675,000. And obviously we're not going to fold the jacks. So would you call or three bet in this situation? We are in the small blind. The original raise came from the chip leader in second position. Let me tell you a little bit about Karim Ribe, the Algerian. He has been fairly loose aggressive, as you might expect a tournament chip leader to be in the main event. I mean, that's usually how they get the big stack in the first place. So I would describe his playing style as loose aggressive, but not ridiculous. I mean, it's not like he's playing 80% of the pots or something, but I would say he's pretty close to a 30% or so VPIP among the hands that they've shown on PokerGo, at least. And this is the featured table. Another consideration is that the big blind is another world-class player, Dan Smith. You guys know Dan Smith just world class. Dan Smith with over 41 million in lifetime earnings in major tournaments. So can you imagine, you know, you win your little bar league or whatever back in Dayton, Ohio or whatever, and you show up for the main event and you somehow make it to day three. And then the Poker Go crew comes over and says, hey guys, we're going to move you to the featured table. And then when you get to the featured table, you've got the small blind, David Peters, and the big blind, Dan Smith. I'd be like, I want my $10,000 back. This is not fair. That's not why we play the main event. I mean, what are the chances that two of the best in the world would be seated next to each other with 1,400 remaining in the main event? Does that affect your decision in David Peters' shoes in the small blind holding pocket jacks? I mean, do you want a three bet and try to get Dan Smith out of there? Do you want to call and hope that Dan Smith goes for some kind of squeeze play so that you can four bet with the jacks? By the way, Dan Smith has about 400,000 in his stack, so he's doing fine. He's a little below average, but just fine at this point in the main. So what to do with the jacks? David Peters surprised me and just called. I think given how loose and aggressive Kareem Ribe has been thus far at this table, I would have expected Peters to go for a three bet and try to chase Dan Smith and get heads up with the player who's very likely to have a hand that is nowhere near as powerful as pocket jacks. So it makes you wonder, is this a bubble consideration? You wouldn't think so because, you know, the big blind is only 5,000 and Peters has 675 in his stack. He's not really close to busting out on the bubble or anything. I'd love to be able to ask David Peters why he called. I imagine his answer would be, well, GTO has this as a sometimes call and sometimes raise. So I took the smaller pot approach just because it's the main event and I don't like to play really big pots pre-flop in the main event. I'm just guessing. That is not his actual answer. And maybe his reasoning has nothing to do with anything I just said. But that would be my best guess about why a top player wouldn't take what many of us would consider to be a pretty obvious three-bet spot pre-flop. So he just calls and Smith folds. So we're going to be heads up to the flop. Hero in the small blind holding the jack of spades, jack of clubs. And now with 36K in the middle, the flop comes. Queen of diamonds, 10 of hearts, 8 of hearts. Queen, 10, 8 with two hearts. Hero holding the jack of spades, jack of clubs. And the action is on David Peters. Well, given that he did not take the lead pre-flop, I would expect Peters to pretty much always check to the razor, no matter what the flop is in this situation. It's a great flop for him. He's got not only a pair between top and middle pair, but he's also got a gut shot, straight draw to go with it. But Peters does check, and then Kareem Ribe checks behind. So there's still 36K in the middle when we see the turn, which is the deuce of clubs. Our board is now queen, 10, 8, deuce with two hearts. And now Peters decides to put in a bet. He just bets 12K into 36K. Now, when you're using this one-third pot sizing, you should be doing so with a relatively wide range. He could have any number of pair and straight draw, pair and flush draw combos. He could also have maybe a pure bluff with a hand like pocket fours every so often, although I wouldn't expect that to be a big part of the range, but I imagine it's in there somehow. And we know Peters likes to try to follow the computers. You know, he's a GTO type of guy. And so the 12K bet should probably be able to be called by a lot of worse hands than pocket jacks. And Ribe does make the call, and I haven't told you yet what he holds. But now with 60K in the middle, the river comes the queen of spades for a final board of queen, 10, 8, deuce, queen. So that queen pairs the board, and now Peters decides to bet 45,000, three quarters of the pot, into the 60K pot. And now I'm ready to tell you that Kareem Ribe has the ace of clubs, 10 of clubs. So he's got second pair when the top card has paired here on the river. I think it would be very difficult to fold ace 10 in that situation for just the simple fact that so many draws have missed, right? I mean, there are a lot of straight draws and flush draws that did not get there. And it's very possible that David Peters, who is always balanced with all of his bets, could easily be betting king high or whatever. I think a pair of 10s, especially when that queen pair is on the river, making it that much less likely that we're up against a queen at all. I just feel like this is a call. I think the solvers would call. We need to have some bluff catchers in our range, especially on a board that contains so many draws and therefore so many hands for Peters to bet, both for value and as a bluff. I think ace 10 makes a great bluff catcher, and I absolutely would have paid off the 45,000. But somehow Kareem Ribe got away from it. We know now that the jacks were good and that it would have been a bad call. Maybe not a bad call, but certainly a painful one to some degree. You always hate to give David Peters more chips. But I have to wonder, in all of three of these hands, how much the bubble affected the play. I feel like in each of these three hands, something very unusual happened. And guys, this is why I'm telling you, if you ever make it to day three of the World Series of Poker main event, as I have done three times, I want you to be aware of how the pressure of the most important bubble of the year affects your opponents, even your very experienced professional opponents. I'm not saying that necessarily that's what happened here, but I think we can all agree that some of the play in these three hands is, well, let's just say, non-standard. That'll do it for this episode. I cannot wait to hear what you guys think about my take on these three hands from day three. Also, we are still working on trying to get that exclusive interview with the great Ebony Kenny. I'm hoping I can have that for you guys sooner rather than later. Make sure you follow on Twitter at Clayton Comic. And for everyone here at Tournament Poker Edge, with special thanks to our very generous sponsor, America's Card Room, I'm Clayton Fletcher. Thank you so much for listening.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. Luck and intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart. Love nobody. Everybody, everybody.